Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for more than 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of July, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Gary Schnitke, University of Illinois agricultural economist. He and his colleagues have taken a look at the farm bill as proposed by the House and the Senate. There aren't very many differences, at least in the farm safety net programs, the ARC and PLC programs. However, looking forward, rather than ARC County, most producers across the Corn Belt states are likely to sign up for PLC. We'll tell you why that's the case, and Gary will have some of the numbers too. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with the folks at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Mark Russo should join us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm out of the office this afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets, at least not yet. But we'll give you the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago when we talk with Kurt Kimmel here in just a bit. I'm headed towards Fargo, North Dakota, and I'll be taking the long route, stopping to check the corn and the soybean crop periodically in Illinois and Iowa, and I don't know, maybe the Dakotas today. And you'll find that on our website right now at willag.org, because I'll give you those updates there on my Twitter account, or you can just go to the Twitter account directly. The handle is at Commodity Week. And if you don't have a Twitter account, willag.org should be embedded there, or you can go to twitter.com/commodityweek. That's all one word, and you'll be able to find those updates as I'm headed across to Illinois and Iowa to bring you an update of what the crop conditions look like in those two states. I can tell you that over the past week in my home area in Mahomet, not very far from here in Champaign, I was struck earlier in the week, and we've gotten rainfall Sunday and I suppose maybe today, though I'm recording this on Sunday afternoon, and things may have gotten better, but I was struck by how quickly the growing degree days, which have piled up, may have impacted the firing of the crop. And it appears to me not because of a shortage of moisture, because we're really not under those conditions yet, but maybe by hybrid. Our term for the day is speculate. Speculation is the practice of engaging in risky financial transactions in an attempt to profit from short or medium-term fluctuations in the market value of a tradable good, rather than attempting to profit from the underlying attributes embodied in the instrument. Many speculators pay little attention to the fundamental value of a security or a commodity, and instead focus purely on price movements. Speculation can, in principle, involve any tradable good or financial instrument. Speculators are particularly common in the market for stocks, bonds, commodity futures, currencies, fine art, collectibles, real estate, and derivatives. Speculators play one of four primary roles in financial markets, along with hedgers who engage in transactions to offset some other pre-existing risk. Arbitrageurs, who seek to profit from situations where fungible instruments trade at different prices in different market segments, and investors who seek profit through long-term ownership of instruments' underlying attributes. The role of speculators is to absorb excess risk that other participants do not want, and to provide liquidity in the marketplace by buying or selling when no participants from other categories are available. Successful speculation entails collecting an adequate level of monetary compensation in return for providing immediate liquidity and assuming additional risk so that, over time, the inevitable losses are offset by larger profits. And that's the definition of speculation.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Traveling today just north of the Wisconsin Dells on my way to Fargo, North Dakota. So I really haven't decided to pull off and take a look at the crops in any respect. However, they all look really pretty good, though. As I noted, if you have read part of my Commodity Week Twitter feed, I wondered whether there was some impact of the growing degree days that have gathered up, and took a poll there. That's still coming in, but it looks like some believe that may be the case. And there is kind of a gray-green cast to some hybrids as opposed to the dark forest green and others. I don't know whether it really means anything or not, but we'll find that out over time. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us for the day.
Well, you're quite welcome, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So as we're recording, and this is right at 1 o'clock, what do the numbers look like in Chicago for corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Yeah, we're seeing the market hold the overnight gain. Corn's up anywhere from 4 to 5 cents. Beans, 4 to 5 cents higher. And the wheat market up 12. Even though wheat's up 12, it is about 10 cents off the high. But wheat's kind of maintained the strength in through here. We've entered a world drought concern. We've got dry areas in Europe, northern China, India, Australia, and portions here in the U.S. And, you know, it's always been said that wheat's growing all over the world, but the whole world's having a little bit of a growing issue, and this wheat thing could get, you know, a little bit more exciting here as we move into this fall, as we start to see the southern hemisphere, so say, warm up and their crop gets going. So there's some urgency there to put a little weather premium into the marketplace. Our U.S. forecast continues to show a little less rain as we reach on out, even though here over the short term we did see some good rains in south central Illinois, anywhere from 2 to 3 inches in some areas, but there's other areas that continues to miss out on these timely rain events. This afternoon's crop conditions report, last week we were around 72%, good to excellent. The average guess is about 71%. Same thing in the beans, last week 70%, this week's average guess is about 69%. And a lot of that is due to the seasonality, and as you mentioned there, the crop moving a little fast in through here to maturity. A lot of opinions on what's happening on the countryside is probably a good question for an agronomist to answer, but we're seeing areas that was too wet and seeing some concerns there. A lot of this brownness, too, guys are mentioning that the corn stock just in general ran out of nitrogen and shutting down early. Then, too, fungicide applications, and had a couple producers talk about they bought some seed genetics that were supposed to be resistant, so they didn't spray, but yet might not be quite up to expectations. So there's a lot of things going on agronomy-wise there that could be seen here as we move through the month of August here next week.
And I guess on the 10th we'll get our best look at it as USDA and their enumerators are likely out in the field now taking some counts, and we'll get an idea during that crop production report what corn and soybeans across the whole of the U.S. Might be like. What's the trade think today those yield numbers are?
It kind of feels like we're in this on corn, this 178 area. You know, there's a little concern that, you know, we might not have the kernel depth or the fill or experiencing some tip back. But, there's guesses higher and lower than that, but kind of dialed in this 178, 179 area. Bean-wise, ideas are a little closer to this 50 bushel per acre level. So we'll see what number we receive on that. But the bottom line, of course, is going to be dictated by not only yield, but some of the demand and feed usage numbers, too. So I think the trade's bracing for a little bit higher carryout estimate versus what we saw here in July.
And as we wrap up our time together, a quick note on what the livestock numbers look like at this point in Chicago, the trade that is, and anything of note from the analysis side.
Well, on the beef side of the equation, even though we're looking at larger numbers, we continue to see fairly good demand. It's the same story we've seen for quite some time, the futures discount to the cash. As we move into August in through here, the August futures are 108 and a half, but yet the cash market continues to hang in there at 111, 112. So overall, the beef complex is hanging in there much better than expected. Whereas the pork side, we continue to see ample numbers of pork. We'll look forward to some new numbers here at the end of the summer here on a new hog and pig report estimate.
Hey, thanks so much, Kurt.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities.
In today's agricultural news, the Farm Bill has stalled in Washington, D.C. The U.S. Senate never took up a motion expected last week to go to conference with the House on the 2018 Farm Bill. But the key procedural step is expected this week. The routine Senate motion to negotiate with the House on a single Farm Bill was expected by midweek last week after the House voted the week before to go to conference and appointed conferees. But the Senate never reacted, says American Farm Bureau Executive Director.
They had a lot of activity on the floor related to some of the appropriations measures, certainly other things going on. Our understanding is it just simply ran out of time and opportunity to bring this up, so it's more process than it is a policy or political issue.
Especially, he says, since the votes are there to move
the Farm
Bill.
Got a Farm Bill that passed the Senate floor 86-11. Tells me that the process is the issue, timing is the issue, and they simply didn't get to it this week. And everything we're hearing is that this will be one of the first things taken care of next week when the Senate reconvenes.
Now, Moore expects the process to continue, even with the House gone for the
August
recess.
The House has left until after Labor Day, but the Senate is going to keep working, and we expect to see them come back in, get conferees named, and give us the opportunity to start working with the formal conference process.
The Ag Committee chairs and ranking members met privately last week to plan pre-conference logistics for August, though no date's been set yet for formal talks in September. On that note, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says he and South Dakota Senator John Thune, who represent key ag states, could be left off the conference committee if leadership only names five Republicans to the panel. If the lingering issues get worked out over the weekend, the earliest the Senate could vote would be Monday afternoon. The House left for its summer recess late Thursday. However, a spokesman for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell tells the Hagstrom Report that the Senate is expected to vote to go to conference again sometime this week. Well, let's move from the Farm Bill to trade, where last week President Trump met with the president of the European Union and came to some conclusion about trade, though it appears now that agriculture may not be part of that deal. The European Union says that the proposed trade talks with the United States would not include farming. The website BusinessTimes.com says this directly contradicts what President Donald Trump says. An EU Commission spokeswoman says they've been very clear on that fact. The spokeswoman adds that agriculture is not part of it, only the things that were specifically mentioned in the statement that came out Thursday. The joint statement shows no mention of agriculture. As such, you'll see a mention of farmers and a mention of soybeans, which are part of the discussion, says Mina Andreeva. That is part of the discussion, and we will follow up on that. The EU clarification comes one day after the president called the agreement a major victory for U.S. farmers, who've seen plummeting exports, of course, due to Washington's trade policies. Trump told a rally in Iowa that we've just opened up Europe for you farmers. The EU may be feeling pressure to emphasize that there was no farming concession made to Mr. Trump because of opposition in Europe to more genetically modified imports from America. We'll continue on the trade front, where during the congressional testimony Thursday, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer told lawmakers that it's entirely possible the three North American Free Trade Agreement members will reach a deal in August, all three of them. Lighthizer says that would meet the objective of having the current president of Mexico sign the deal before he leaves office in December. Bloomberg says the U.S. trade law requires a three-month waiting period before the parties can sign off on the deal. Should the three countries not reach a deal until September or later, the incoming president of Mexico would have to sign off on it after he takes office. Lighthizer says Canada may be the sticking point in reaching a new NAFTA agreement. My hope, he says, is that we'll have a quick resolution with Mexico, and as a result of that, Canada may come in more willingly to compromise. The current Mexican economy minister says it is possible they will reach a deal with the U.S. in August. The chief NAFTA negotiator for the incoming government says he's more cautiously optimistic about the direction of the talks. We'll stay with trade, but move to the $12 billion worth of assistance that's been pledged to farmers. A Farm Journal report quotes ag leader Alan Hoskins as saying it's far too soon to know how beneficial the aid will be. Hoskins did say one thing is clear. It's not what farmers want. They want to be able to turn a profit by selling their grain, and not by getting government handouts. Now, Hoskins says cash flow is going to be very tight this year, which will lead to some difficult conversations between producers and lenders. Illinois producer Michael Cox tells Farm Journal that the aid package is just a temporary fix, at best, because there are too many questions about the program. Hoskins says many farmers are wide open to market volatility at this point, and those payments will come in handy. You can read more about what is in the works for that $12 billion and how it will be signed up for and potentially paid out on our website at willag.org. Now, finally, this note on Mr. Trump and the potential approval of year-round E15. President Trump says his administration is very close to approving the year-round sale of the E15 blend of ethanol. During a trip to Iowa on Thursday, Trump told the audience, "I'm very close to pulling off something that you've been looking forward to for many years, and that's the 12-month E15 waiver. We're getting very close to doing that." The Quad City Times says Trump called the process very complex. The president noted that he stuck with ethanol, saying most of the other candidates weren't there, to put it mildly. Pro-ethanol group Growth Energy says, "We're pleased to hear President Trump say he's very close to making E15 available year-round, fulfilling his promise to America's farmers." Growth Energy says increased access to U.S. markets will provide America's farmers with some financial confidence, and they hope the president will direct the Environmental Protection Agency to act quickly to provide year-round RVP. That stands for Reed Vapor Pressure Relief. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on the U of I campus. He and his colleagues have penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website looking at the differences between the Senate and House versions of the Farm Bill and some of the things that the conferees in the committee will need to come to a compromise on. One of those is related to the ARC and the PLC programs. In particular, there's not a lot of difference between the two of them. However, when producers end up with a bill, they'll have some decisions to make. And you wanted to go through what those decisions might look like, especially as it relates to ARC County and PLC. Those are the two programs that producers have been used to using. It looks like they'll need to swap in the future.
Yeah, for corn farmers, if we're looking for in the future, corn base acres, right now both the House and the Senate versions of PLC are projected to make higher payments than ARC County. Both the Senate and House versions of ARC County have less payments than PLC. A lot of that has to do with the price environment that we're now in. We're in a much lower price environment where prices are near the reference price of 370, so any shortfalls or prices below 370 will trigger PLC payments, but ARC County payments won't be triggered until we hit something like 318 because of the 86% coverage factor in ARC County. So we're at that point. If either one of those pass, most producers and landowners will be picking PLC for their corn base.
Yeah, it's important to note that while there are differences between the House and the Senate version, the differences aren't great, and they aren't really very big at all when it comes down to the finance. I think a dollar more in the Senate version under the Arc County, but it still remains far under the PLC program.
Yeah, so the Senate PLC, excuse me, the Senate's ARC program has two modifications compared to the current program and also what the House is offering. They adjust upward the guarantee based on having a yield trend included in that calculation. And they also have a 75% of T yield as the lowest yield in the yield calculation. Those, again, aren't going to have a large impact on payments moving forward. So while they're modifications and increase the payments, again, they're not getting Arc County close to PLC.
Is it possible that the conferees would look at both the Arc County from the House side and the Senate side and say, neither of these quite works properly. We'd like to improve them. Could they do that and then pass that compromise on for a vote?
Yes, they could. They could make fairly major modifications to Arc County to bring it up closer to PLC payments or expected payments. Some of the things that they could do is increase the coverage level. So it's currently set at 0.86 in both bills. They could increase that to, say, 0.9. They could increase the payment range, and that's currently set at 0.1. They could increase that to 0.2 or something along that lines. And they could also increase the floor price or the lowest price that would go into the benchmark price calculation. Currently, that lowest price is at $3.70. They could increase it to something like $4 or $4.20 to increase that benchmark price. So, yes, they could do all of those things.
And that would give producers a choice then between ARC and PLC, depending on what they did, but it would get closer at that point.
Yeah, right now, what I would imagine most producers are going to do is say, I'm going to look at what the expected payments are from these two programs, and that's pretty much what they did last time. Arc County was projected to be the higher paying program, and most people want that direction. This time they would go into the direction of PLC. If they got those two programs more closely together in terms of expected payments, people could make a determination of whether they want to go price route or revenue route.
One final question, because there were some differences last time geographically across the United States, where the western United States, part of the West, certainly the southern United States, cotton, peanut growers, rice growers, were choosing PLC over ARC. Have those changed at all, or does it just add in the corn and the soybean producers?
So cotton, peanuts, rice would not change their choice. That would still be PLC, or PLC would be projected to have the highest payment. So those producers would still say with PLC. It's a much closer call on soybeans, because soybean prices still are above that reference price of $8.40. So what producers do with soybeans is an open question. But you would see much more use of PLC around, and you would add the Midwest corn producers in the PLC camp rather than the Arc County camp.
I had forgotten that they were making choices based on all of their crops, so they may very well have both in the Corn Belt.
Yep. And they'll have to make those decisions on soybeans as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Cheesecake Day. It's also St. Abdon's Day, patron of barrel makers. The Romans used barrels as early as the 3rd century AD. By the mid-20th century, barrels had largely lost their appeal, except for the aging of spirits, including wine and whiskey. On this day in agricultural history in 1739, Caspar Wistar founded the first successful large-scale glass factory in the U.S. Much of his trade was with the production of wine bottles. In 1838, it supposedly rained frogs in London. In 1849, Jacob Perkins died. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. Perkins also produced the first nails, which were both cut and headed by machine in America. He also patented a hot air furnace. In 1898, cornflakes were invented by William Kellogg, 4 years after he and his brother John Harvey accidentally invented a flaked cereal process based on wheat. In 1906, the brothers founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company, which is known today as Kellogg's. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities, and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo now joins us. He's with Brisk Pulse out of Chicago. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me about the weather forecast across the Midwest first for the next several days, please?
Yeah, well, Todd here. With the pattern here upcoming, even in the short term, we are going to see over the next several days still some unseasonably cool temperatures here across the Corn Belt, and along with that, some scattered showers and storms in the southern and far eastern sections of the Midwest, namely, and we're seeing that right now in areas of Indiana, kind of exiting Illinois, and then on into Ohio. However, one of the things that's going to be taking place shortly thereafter is that by the end of this week, temperatures will be rebounding. In fact, rebounding back to warmer than normal levels, and that looks to stay in place through all of next week. And thus, this stretch of cooler than normal temperatures that we've been in for basically the past week or so, it's short-lived, and we're seeing heat return. Again, nothing extreme is in the cards here over the next couple of weeks, but a return of warmer than normal temperatures can be expected here by the end of this week and then on into next week. With that increase in temperatures, we're not seeing any kind of major precip opportunities for the Midwest. Granted that there will be some rain activity at times, including some thunderstorm development, but overall, for the majority of the Midwest, I'm going to be in a below normal rainfall pattern, which is an extension of the general below normal rainfall that we've seen.
So last night there were a few storms that rumbled through parts of Illinois. How widespread was that, and how much rainfall did it drop?
Yeah, the most significant rainfall here over the past, well, not only past 24 hours, but also over the past, over the full weekend, portions of eastern Nebraska down into far southern counties of Iowa, northern Missouri into central Illinois. Now, some of those areas had been on the drier side, especially portions of southern Iowa and northern Missouri. And so these rains are definitely welcome there, but overall pretty concentrated just in that southwestern part of
the Corn
Belt.
When you look further into the month of August, do you see another rainfall event in the next, 7 to 14 days?
We see minor opportunities for rain, but from a overall like a main storm system coming through, which you can't have at this time of year, an upper level wave moves into the Midwest and produces more widespread rains. We do not see that type of pattern here, and that's mainly due to the fact that the upper level pattern is changing. We're getting into a northern based ridge environment again, and that helps to limit these waves of low pressure from tracking directly into the Corn Belt.
And then again, if you could give me the temperatures, maybe the highs, and whether the lows will be very warm overnight or not.
Yeah, as we get into late this week and on in through next week, specifically in the Corn Belt, highs will be climbing generally into the upper 80s to mid 90s. Some of the hottest temperatures will be more so confined to the western and southern areas of the Corn Belt and areas of Nebraska into Missouri, southern Iowa, and here in central southern Illinois and Indiana. From a minimum temperature standpoint, overall upper 60s and low to mid 70s will be the minimum temperatures across most areas.
Okay, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dad.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. He is out of Chicago. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.